Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello everyone, welcome to Red Men TV. This is the final word show. Now, we record this on the website after every single Liverpool game, but we thought in the wake of some recent poor performances and what have you, and very much the realisation that a lot of the stuff that we talk about Liverpool, the ins and outs and the calm reaction, the in-depth reaction, people don't get to see if you're not a subscriber. We thought, given the current climate, it was worth putting this out there and letting people have a little look.
Yeah, I think we've seen a lot in the comments, and you know, we might not respond to every single comment, but we obviously read every single comment. And I think there's a depth of feeling sometimes towards the reactionary nature of fan cams, and I just kind of wanted to showcase the other stuff that we do on the channel, because it's one thing speaking to camera instantly as soon as a match is finished and your views on it, but taking reflection, watching the game back, and then talking it through with your mates is ultimately what every Liverpool fan should be doing. And you know, there's that period of reflection where you can really formulate your own ideas. And I think this show coming up was just fantastic. You know, we had Simon Hughes in, we got Ross in, me and you, and I really enjoyed it. And it's about, you know, it's just about thinking it through and looking at every area of the team, and you can pick through stuff and you can be negative, but try and draw out those positives as well.
Well, yeah, like I say, this is the final word show. This is us trying our best to reason with the ups and downs of the Leicester defeat in the Carabao Cup. If you enjoy this show, as I say, after every single match, we do this on the redmentv.com. So if you want to support the show, go over there and join up, but enjoy what you're about to see to the best of your ability. Hello everyone, welcome to the Red Men TV. It's the final word show. I can't believe we're here doing this again. We're going to sit here and we're going to talk about the same fucking game again, albeit with different players involved. The one thing that is different is we're joined by the wonderful Simon Hughes, who, have a guess.
There's a book out. Once a year gig, this one, isn't it?
But no, you know, proving that it's not all fun and games promoting books. I has to come in and talk about Liverpool losing 2-0 to Leicester. Ross Chanley joins us as well, of course, and of course, the man, the legend, that is Mr. Chris Page.
That's the nicest introduction you've ever given me, and that's the creepiest.
Chris, I fucking hate Leicester.
I hate them too, Paul. Three times now. I've been there. Three times we've been beaten. Fans and knobheads. Uninventive football fans going. They're just England fans.
They are fully England fans. They are the kind of people that, yeah, it's like if Bath or York ever got promoted to the Premier League, they'd be exactly the same as Leicester fans.
They would. And I think, you know, I counted last night 25,000 people with a Leicester badge on one calf and an England badge on the other.
And a big fans of the English Defence League. I saw one person genuinely twirling a Cross of St George flag around the top of the net.
Is that a thing?
Mate, in Leicester. Wow. Yeah, and obviously a lot of other Tory hotspots as well.
It's a Tory hotspot, isn't it?
It was, oh God. I mean, we'll get into the game. I think what we're kind of going to do with this is we're just going to talk through all the really, really bad stuff. Get it all done. Get it all out the way. And then we'll pick through some of the positives a bit later on. Because I think, we've tried our best, I think, by and large, to not get swept up in stuff. And I don't feel like, I don't feel at this point like it's being swept up or it's being knee-jerk reactionary. That's now a number of games on the bounce where, yes, there are extenuating circumstances, and we'll come to a little bit of that later on. But as we kind of said in the drive home, it's not fair of us. It's not fair to ask us as fans to reason these things out fairly. I don't think a lot of the time. I think we could all be a bit more level-headed in a general sense, but it's not right of us to think Coutinho needs minutes therefore it's fine for him to come off at half time. It's not fair for us to think this will work out in the fullness of time. In three games' time, we'll understand why we played the team we did and why we approached it the way we did, etc., etc., etc. What is fair of us is to go to watch a game of football and expect us to put in a bit more of a performance.
Yeah, and I think, to be fair, like, you know, I watched Klopp's press conference back this morning, and the last three games I've been getting a little bit more down each and every game, which is mad considering the worst result of the lot was the City game, and I kind of took that one on the chin. But last night you could see, you know, from the title of my fan cam and all that, I was a lot more down on it. And to be fair, like, that's actually mirrored by Jurgen Klopp. I think the last three games he's been all right in his press conferences, but it was kind of, it got to the end of his tether last night a little bit and started talking about the defence and the lack of awareness and, you know, the situations in game where we seem to be conceding goals. But he also mentioned, and I agree, that first half, it was a much more fluid performance than I actually thought it was going to be. You make 7-8 changes and we didn't look disjointed in any way, shape or form. Yeah. You know, we were creating well, we were moving between defence, midfield and attack really well, and we were kind of stumbling when we got up to the final third of the pitch, which is always the most difficult part, isn't it? It's the most congested part of the pitch. Three front players you've probably not played together before. Well, certainly haven't, because Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's full debut. You know, guy who's...
Dom Solanke.
Is that his full debut?
That will be his full.
Well, okay, yeah, of course. I've forgotten all about that. Yeah. Like, and you know, you got Phil Coutinho coming back from injury, and yet there were still moments during the game. But they're continuing the blag, aren't they?
Yeah,
this 45 minutes, you've got to play him back into fitness, give him a pre-season, he's coming back from injury. That's an astounding blag that they've had going on for a few weeks now. Like,
yeah,
so when you
that.
Say something and you lie about something when you're 15 and you're still carrying it on to this day, and trust me, I know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Chris has a little insight into this. Chris's name for his mum and dad's home number on his mobile was Start to Lie.
Yeah.
So whenever his phone rang, it would say Start to Lie, which is great. I've genuinely...
You've been with me and I've been just chilling in his playing Pro Evo or something.
Doing nothing out of the
ordinary. So completely different.
He's a bit else. We're perfectly innocent. No, nothing wrong with us being where we were and doing what we were doing. And he just says he was in someone else's house for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, it's good practice. You know, you never know when that comes in handy. And it did come in handy, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Chris could pass a polygraph. it is a good point, and it is probably a. It's not a positive as such side, but it's. Jurgen Klopp makes the point, and it's a point I agree with, in that he says, you know, we've made changes once again, and we haven't looked like a terrible football side for making changes. We've made mass changes in years gone by, and if you make 7 changes to the team last year or the year before that, that's when we ended up with Jose Enrique playing centre half, and you know, and that kind of stuff.
And captain, by the way.
Well, yeah, great. So the point that he makes is a decent one, and there's maybe a little bit of a law of diminishing returns in this regard, because we're nowhere near as potent without Mane, Salah, Firmino, but we were still able to hold our own, to control a football match, to create chances, and that's exactly the same was true at the weekend. So that is something. But inevitably, it's another situation where we've changed the back line again and nothing seems to be...
Yeah.
We seem no more stable for having
I thought they looked more threatening going forwards against Leicester than they did against Burnley in the first half against Leicester, I should say. But I thought Klopp's reaction afterwards was unlike him, really. Mm. You know, when you consider his whole personas about the team and everyone staying together, he did dig out the defence a little bit and... I find this whole kind of narrative a bit odd about the way Liverpool perceive, because everybody's saying, they attack so much, they're going to leave gaps at the back. But none of the goals you conceded this season have been a consequence of that.
Yeah, we're not getting snotted on the counter-attack.
It's been individual errors all the way through. Watford, from set pieces.
Wijnaldum, was it?
Yeah, you know, just people, players making mistakes, not because they're under any necessary... level of pressure, just because he switched off at times. And I think that's, you know, that criticism is valid. You know, when players are making individual mistakes, eventually there comes a point where the manager's going to have to say, you're out.
Yeah.
And I wonder now, you know, whether that point has come. But the problem is he doesn't have that many options behind. Yeah. And that's a fault of the summer. So it goes back again and we start talking about the summer again, which I'm sure you don't want to talk about.
You're right.
But... But I just think that we're Klopp at the moment. We were just talking about it before. Like, you know, a lot of the criticism, some of the criticism is fair, but the problem is in this whole mad, you know, social media world, you know, if you criticise now, it's seen as you're against Klopp. You want him to go, or you're against FSG. They should go. We should get some of their owners. It's like we've lost the ability to be able to criticise.
Yeah.
And it being lost in this kind of absolute noise, you know. And
yeah.
I think, you know, managers, you know, the best managers, the best owners, the best players, they react well to criticism, yeah, largely. So sooner or later, you know, we're going to see, whether there's a reaction, because teams do go through bad periods of form.
I think the problem is that we've been raised now on, 15, 20 years now of us having a team peaking, not at the top of the league. You know what I mean? Not peaking with a league title,
yeah,
they're peaking with a second place finish or a third place or a fourth place finish. And I just think, you know, it just feels, Ross, like we're just wounded, aren't we? You know, and it's gotten, Brendan Rodgers probably pretty much killed us off in that regard in 13, 14. Like, we're never going to trust again.
Yeah,
and so whenever it starts to go a bit wrong, Simon's right there, is that it's not possible to go, Klopp got that wrong, and that be, he got it wrong in that game, or he got that wrong in a spell of games, as though it's an absolute. Klopp got that wrong, therefore Klopp's wrong, therefore Klopp will always be wrong, therefore Klopp out. You know what I mean? That kind of stuff. That's, no, but
you're right.
I feel like I'm reading a Douglas Adams, you know, radio play, but, you know, because it's got the patois that goes with it. Like, but this is exactly the problem we've got right now. Is there's plenty. It's fine to say what's wrong with the team, because it's plain as day for all to see.
Yeah, I think we said this the other day. You know, everyone demands instant success now, don't they? And you said every team goes through a bad period, but things could be a lot worse. And it's the same if you put a positive spin on things. People are like, well, we're still shit. And it's like, well, we're not shit. Everyone goes through a bad spell or a bad period and stuff. Do you know what I mean? It's early days in the season, only four games in. It's like everyone thinks it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
It's not.
It was inevitable. I think there was going to be a period of adjustments. We forget this because we kind of did this with the expectation the last time we got into the Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
Except that it's always easy with the gift of hindsight, and maybe in 3 years' time when we're back in it again, we'll look back on this period as another period of delusion. But I don't think I'm wrong in saying I think this side is miles better than what we had the last time.
I agree with what you just touched on there. It's a major, like, a psychological issue with the club in terms of, you know, talking about the owners, because you can't talk about the manager without the owners. And, you know, the owners are fighting this trust, you know, issue, really, which has been there for a long time. So when it seems like things are going against, it's because, you know, the fans don't trust them. But I don't think they manage that situation well enough, you know, over a long period of time, which is fair enough. So again, it's a historical, you know, a historical battle that the Klopp's facing. Equally, you're right about the Brendan thing, and I haven't quite thought of it like that. You know, kind of, I suppose that the previous owners before FSG, you know, broke the trust in the minds. You know, like Brendan's failure, you know, broke everybody's heart. So it feels like now, you know, it's just going to go in that direction again.
But it's like having your girlfriend cheat on you and your mum leave your dad.
Yeah,
that's the equivalent of, you know, breaking the ownership and the management trust in the space of 5 years, 6 years' time.
Yeah.
We're on the floor. So every time we have a couple of sticky games with a cup, we go through a little bit of a bad patch. It feels like that the club's completely fucked on every level.
And this is where, again, I think the Klopp will benefit from just a bit of advice from within the club as well, because I've often said this and put it in writing that I don't think that the club sometimes really, there's nobody at the club there to give the manager just a little advice, you know, this is how people feel, you know, just to think, did he talk these things through about the perception of the way the team is playing and the way the fans think? It should be discussed at least. I don't know whether it is, I'm pretty certain it doesn't. And this is one of those situations where I think, you know, at the moment when the team's going through a bit of a bad spell. And I did find that interesting last night that he did, you know, decide to actually, you know, be critical of his own players, because that hasn't happened before, really, you know, at a period where they're coming under fire anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the club will benefit from that from time to time, just to give him a bit of a steer on the PR of it all, you know, to try and manage
it a little bit more. Respectfully disagree with that, because what I love about Jurgen Klopp is that he speaks the truth. And I think as soon as you start putting PR on somebody and you start putting a spin on it, then trust can be broken even more.
All right, well, I take your point. Probably shouldn't use the word PR, because I totally agree. I think the club sometimes does get lost in the whole PR of it all. What I mean is in terms of just really understanding, you know, like kind of the common,
kind of feeling around the club, because I think when you're the manager as well, I mean, I know he's coming under fire all the time, but because he's getting criticism even in the good times, you know, I think now that the managers, you know, Klopp's gone on records, and I do trust him on this again, you know, that he doesn't read the papers. So, you know, I think a lot of managers don't anymore. I think they probably get told by, you know, if there was something that was like, you know, personal, they get told by the press office, but I don't think he listens to any of it. And I think sometimes the club,
I agree with that, but I think the problem he's got is, and I think this is what last night was, and that's why I felt better about his reaction last night, is the questions he's getting asked tell him what's being written in the papers without him having to write it. So when he's getting asked about the defence constantly, and he's getting asked about Phil Coutinho constantly, he knows what everyone's talking about, and I think that's what again, it's weird.
Does
that
it feel like sometimes that he's late to the party on it? Because you know, Simon's just raised an interesting point, is that, you know, he might be getting asked these questions, but sometimes when you read something out of context, you don't know the full ins and outs of the story. So maybe he reacts how you wouldn't expect, because, you know, everybody's talking about this, but they only ask because they're privy to the whole story.
I think it helps him. I think it's a bit of a throwback in some regards, because I don't see that there's any British person who doesn't. Because he's, you know, I think it helps being foreign in some regards in that, because you're not going to pick the echo up. You know what I mean? You're not going to, you know, a lot of the stuff that's coming at you is not going to be in your native language. You're not going to be arsed with it anyway. But I think that I think it helps. I think it's a good thing in so much as it means that he's not going to be beholden to the fast-changing tides, you know what I mean? The way that things change, people flip-flop on stuff. But inevitably, if there's a thing that he's getting asked every single week, then yeah, he's going to be... Just like I said, the point that I liked about it was that it was a good chance for him to just go, look, I'm dead pissed off with it. Yeah. I'm really pissed off. Don't think I'm not, because that's what I think he's best at, is that he wears his heart on his sleeve. And if you can see it's annoying him, I'd be more concerned, because we've had managers like this in the past. Roy Hodgson was the prime example of it. Trying to tell you it was great when it wasn't. Brendan was kind of like that too. Jürgen Klopp saying he's getting annoyed by it. Now, maybe some people might go, God, you know, you want your managers to be this imperious figure who's indefatigable at all times. But for me, it made it a bit like, well, good, he feels the same frustrations that we do with it. If he was being a bit too blasé about it, or being a bit, I'd be like maybe a bit distrusting of that somehow, and I'd feel as though he isn't clued into what the mistakes are. He is a bit deluded to what the weaknesses of his team are. Whereas I think when he comes out and says, you know, look, we practice defending. You're just like, are you stupid? Of course we practice defending. We practice every
possible...
But it was
nice to hear him say that, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Because for weeks I've been thinking, do they? Do they really?
Situation. But there's just no accounting for
a player. They know how to do it. Yeah. They're not actioning that on the pitch. And that's what we're seeing at the moment, unfortunately, isn't it?
I think other managers have used this term before. It's like the ability to see through the noise, that the fair criticism and the ridiculous, because some of it is all part of the same package, I guess. But, you know, that is a skill, being able to see, you know, what is fair and what is not. And, you know, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago in a piece that I wrote, and I do think that it's a particularly Anfield-relevant, you know, kind of mood, is that Liverpool people, you know, they want to see a streetwise team. This idea that Liverpool play free-flowing attacking football is a total myth. Yeah. You know, it's always been...
We're
belligerent. That's why, I mean, I know, obviously, Rafa won, you know, trophies to back it up, but I think we related to Rafa because he was quite belligerent, you know, like a lot of Scousers are. And there's nothing worse as a local supporter inside Anfield when it just feels like the team's been getting the piss taken out of them, you know. Yeah. Just feel nothing. It's like God, we can't identify with them. It's
very hard to sing songs about how you're great and glorious when you've just got this. You just keep. It's like you say, it's laughable how we keep doing the same thing. It's like we can stand up against it. We can put back in and go, we trust that this is all in hand. But if it keeps happening, there's definitely a Scouse reaction where you're like, fucking hell, lads.
Yeah.
Stop leaving us out to hang, you know, you're hanging us out to dry.
A perfect example of that is, you know, during the 13-14 season, we sang Poetry in Motion loads. The next season, we didn't sing it. And it wasn't until maybe last season when we were beating Leicester and stuff like that we started singing that again, because you have to believe in what you're singing as well a lot of the time. And, you know, just to go back a little bit on, I think it was your point actually, Paul, And sorry, NFL's talk again, like, but here we go. I'm reading a book called Take Your Eyes Off the Ball 2.0, and they talk you, it's written by a former coach, and he tells you a little bit about what the coaches do in the off season and stuff. And they spend 5 weeks, the NFL head coaches, looking back at every decision they've made the previous season and self-analysing everything that they've made. And I think sometimes in football, we don't think that that happens because we always look forwards. Mm. We're looking at the next game and the next game and the next game and the next game. But don't be surprised, and I would be surprised, sorry, if Jurgen Klopp didn't take a period last season or in the off-season and look back at everything that they've done last season and find out where his faults were and look to see where they've improved. And that's probably why he's so pissed off,
yeah.
Because he's had a full season looking at these mistakes over and over and over again and rectifying that on the training ground in pre-season and during this season, and still the same problems
it's,
are happening.
It's like that famous sketch, and the one that springs to mind is the Simpsons one where they did the Cape Fear episode and they have to teach Homer, to, you know, hello, Mr. Thompson, you just got to smile and nod. And it's like, it's not quite that, but it's the very old sketch where you teach someone something and say it like this and they do it in practice and you go, right, do it for real, and they do it wrong and you're like, what are you doing? You've been getting it right in practice all again. So how come when we say action, you get it fucking wrong every time? And I just, that's what it starts to feel like for me, Ross, is that that's probably where the frustration's boiling over for him. There's maybe a bit of the sense of Goffman's post-match stuff is Jürgen's going, we practice this. And it's like, they are fine. In every set of tests, these are absolutely fine. This works. These guys do everything I ask of them. And my God, in training, you joked about it, though. These guys are coming up against better players in training. These fucking defenders are training against Sadio Mane, Roberto Firmino, and Mo Salah, and they're absolutely fine. No other defence in the league can handle these guys. Our defence can handle these guys. And then we come up against basically borderline Slovani. Championship
Scott
level.
Harfield.
We come against relegation level footballers and our guys just completely zone out. I'm frustrated with that, and I can see that Jurgen Klopp is quite clearly absolutely raging with it as well. Because what more can you do? I mean, the obvious answer is to buy more centre halves in the summer, but let's not.
I think the past couple of weeks, I think he's tried to protect them defenders because of that reason. And I think last night he's been backed into a corner. Yeah. I don't think he's got any option to say anything else, especially with like the small group of people that are saying no, Klopp out or whatever. He's probably bought respect to the fans by coming out and just being honest, because that's what everyone's been screaming for him to say. Is
yeah.
We know what's going on. How can't you see it?
Yeah, I think I think ultimately the game in a general sense, Chris, though, circumstances, I can write off getting knocked out of the League Cup, because again, it's one of those things when the season exists in hypothetics and you're planning for the glory of the season ahead, you start to mentally think, we get knocked out the League Cup, you know what, it gives us a couple of weeks off that we wouldn't have if we go all the way to the final or whatever, and it gives you slightly fresher legs to compete on in the Champions League and in the Premier League and what have you. But the very real reality of this is that if we've got a pretty big squad, we've got a load of players there, and I feel dead sorry for the lads who put in a good shift there. It was the Danny Ward, the Ben Woodburn, even a little Grewich. Bit of Danny Ings, the Grujic, even the Gomez who had some sticky moments, but whatever. Get these lads getting a game in the positions we want to see them playing in, and all of a sudden you're looking at going, is it going to be January before we see these lads get that game time again? And that's why it's I don't want to say a travesty, it's hyperbole, but that's why it's a really bad thing, us getting knocked out of the League Cup.
Yeah, it is, because, listen, Paul, you've hit the nail on the head there on a few points, but, you know, the Danny Ward's, the Marco Grujic, they're the players that I want to see develop, and you can't see development of these footballers without getting 90 minutes under a belt against proper opposition, you know, in cup competitions where something's on the line, because you can play in under-23s and all that type of stuff, but it's just not the same. Like, you know, you go into a cup competition and maybe you're playing a team in a lower division or whatever, but they're up for it and they're going to bring their A game against you, and you know that every single time. And, you know, you need to see how these guys perform. You need to see how they perform in their position with experienced players around them. Because I always think, you know, I like seeing, I go back to it, and I say this every year, don't I, Paul? I want to see a squad named for the League Cup. That's the change for the competition that I want. I want to see a squad named at the beginning of the season, and you either put your trust in the kids until the final, or you don't, and you make a play at that cup competition. I think that makes it fairer for all the big clubs and for all the young lads in and around the competition. But, you know, there's no point really playing all the kids in one go, because when they come into the side, they're not playing with those guys. Yeah. I want to see them play with Jeannie Wijnaldum, Jordan Henderson.
I thought we got the balance right in that regard.
It was perfect. And that's what I'm trying to say, is the balance was good, because you saw Ben Woodburn playing left wing, you know, with Jeannie Wijnaldum for a little bit, I think it was, or did he come on for him? Or you saw Marco Grujic playing with Henderson and Wijnaldum. And if you need him in the centre midfield, he's going to be playing with those players, so let him build up a little bit of a relationship and stuff. So it's gutting. And look, Danny Ward, I want to see more of him. Yeah. You know, we were saying last night, I think he's the best goalkeeper at the club.
Yeah.
I think he needs games to prove it. I think he's got the potential to be. I think his ceiling may be higher than the others. Maybe Karius has got a higher ceiling, actually.
Who knows?
But who knows, yeah. So I'm just gutted that we're not going to see that.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it, Ross, as well. And it's, for as much, you know, your seasons can't hinge on a League Cup win. You know, that's not good enough. It's not a big enough trophy that it's considered like a successful season to just do that. There needs to be more to it. But look, there's come a point where it's still the last piece of silverware that we won, and it's far too long since we won a piece of silverware, and we've had too many instances of glorious, inglorious, spectacular, whatever we want to call it. Too many years of not winning fucking silverware. That
is this the longest drought we've gone through as fans?
Personally, since we've been, no, because we went
92 to 95.
We went 95 to 2001, didn't we?
Yeah.
I think that's right. We went anything between there and between the League Cup and the treble, did we?
A couple of narrow misses in the Premier League.
Yeah. Yeah. So yes, it's not far. It's not far off it. But this is the point: is that I don't know. Again, it goes back to what I was saying. Now it's not our. It shouldn't be our job to sit here and try and make excuses for this, because listen, it exists within the realms of possibility. Maybe the FA Cup's a greater priority and we could go on and win the FA Cup, but we won't know the answer to that until fucking May. We won't know whether it's going to have a positive impact on the Champions League till December. We won't know if it's had an impact on the Premier League till May. All I know is that Liverpool need to get some silverware in the bag, because whether it's a massive trophy or not, it's a thing that Liverpool just it's hanging over our heads. It's weighting the proverbial backpack that Jurgen Klopp talked about when he came in. And it's another year we're going to go where there's one less piece of silverware that we can win, effectively.
Yeah, I don't think you should be able to pick and choose which trophies you want to win. Every trophy has to be a priority, especially when you say that long spell you've gone without. Why shouldn't you go for everyone? You know, other teams might have that option of going, we're not really asked about it. And in hindsight, people have already said it now. Oh, it's just a Carabao Cup. But I don't know if it's been exacerbated by the previous results we've had. Do you know what I mean? If we beat Sevilla, we beat Burnley, beat City, and gone, it's just Carabao Cup, it doesn't matter. Just everything feels worse because we're just on a shit run.
Well, it's worth noting, Ty, like last year we had that great win against Arsenal at the Emirates. Then we went and got beat by Burnley, and everyone was a bit like, ugh. And I remember a lot of people totally threw all the positivity of the Arsenal result out the window and said, no, this is what Liverpool are really like. This is Burnley. This is us over and over again. This is us repeating the same old mistakes, yada, yada, yada. And then we went and put a good team out against Burton and got through the second round of the League Cup at the time. And that eased everyone's nerves over things, I think, and that's the double annoyance of this in some regard, because it's just every game. Now we're now at a point where, look, it's not like we're losing; we've not lost a batch of games, so we're not in this massive crisis. But this just feeling of just unease and a little bit of dissension, whatever, it's the pressure's going to grow. It just means there's loads more on this game at the weekend than there should be. You know what I mean? If we just manage to get something in this, you get to go in and treat the Leicester game as just a game of footy.
Yeah.
Whereas all of a sudden, and we're going to do the build a bit later on, but we're just putting pressure on ourselves to some extent.
Yeah, well, part of me also thinks, you know, the title of the League Cup, now the Carabao Cup. Can you imagine if Liverpool had won that and that would be the only thing they won this season? It would have been belittled anyway, to some extent. You know, I mean, I kind of wonder whether I agree with what Chris is saying there, but I kind of think the players, as you said, need to be playing around experienced first team players to get that, you know, level of experience that they need. You know, playing all together at the same time seldom really works out. It's around, you know, the establishment, experienced players that you kind of make, you know, gain more lessons. But yeah, to answer your question, I just think that at the moment. Like, any defeat is going to feel like it. You know, it's the start of the season as well, particularly at the start of a season when the expectations are so positive and so high. When you lose a couple of games, particularly losing to Manchester City by that scoreline, I mean, at the time, I think a lot of people were in denial about, like, kind of how they felt about that, because they were saying, oh, you know, it's they had the man sent off. So after that, whatever happened, doesn't matter. They lost 5-0 to a Manchester club. Yeah. It's embarrassing.
Yeah,
so that lingers, that whether you're trying, however, which way you want to dress it up. I mean, if Liverpool go and beat Leicester and then win in Moscow, which is possible, you know, things suddenly start looking up. But I just think there needs to be, obviously, some kind of sense of perspective. But I can understand why people are frustrated. Taps into all these things that we're talking about. It's not one reason why people are frustrated. There's a lot of reasons, you know, historical reasons, you know, the same thing happening over and over again defensively. Particularly when, you know, it's such a high profile public mistake that they made in the summer with Van Dijk, you know, that erodes trust in the club as well. Yeah. So there's a lot of reasons why we've reached this point. It's not just one reason. It isn't just, you know, it isn't just people being irrational.
Yeah.
But there is obviously some irrationality in some of the conclusions.
Well, that's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
But being a fan, it's an emotive sort of thing. Just getting back to the game, because I think the thing that wound me up about this, because, like I say, I do agree with Jürgen when he says this whole, you know, given how fine we were in the first half, it proved that it wasn't this horrendous, disjointed performance, which you would expect to get by making changes. But the thing for me, and I don't know whether I did it in the post-match stuff, but we certainly discussed it on the walk back to the car, was that the taking Coutinho off stuff. Now, he says post-match, that was a pre-planned thing. And I think fine, because we've kind of said in the build-up, we want to see Woodburn getting this, but I don't know how Woodburn gets in this team as well. So 45 minutes for Ben Woodburn's development was good, but effectively it showed the difference in mentality between how we approach this game and how Leicester approached the game. I felt anyway that, you know, okay, it was enforced because Joao goes off injured.
The Okazaki substitution.
They bring Okazaki on and he galvanises that team. The fans get dead excited and, you know, he bombs through the middle of the pitch. And
Megan, our captain.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone gets dead excited and he gives a lift. Whereas we brought on a 17-year-old, I've said this before, but a lad who has not played footy for 2 years, effectively. And, you know, made our team weaker with our substitutions, whereas they made their team a bit stronger.
That's exactly right, Paul. I mean, you know, you look at it and you go, I understand why Coutinho gets 45, because I think you can sit next to Ben Woodburn and go, watch that lad. That's what I want you to do. Is you put Ben Woodburn out first, doesn't learn anything from watching Phil Coutinho in the first half. You can look for maybe tendencies that a defender's got, showing him which way and stuff like that. So you go into the game, you've got that little bit of knowledge against their right back, and you think to yourself, okay, I know he's been shown Phil this way. I'll do something slightly different, so I'll take advantage of that. Great, that's what I want to see from a substitute coming into the game. But the fact that we brought Danny Ings on, and the fact that... who was the other one, sorry? Was it just the two substitutions we made again?
It's a great question.
So yeah, regardless, 2 years he's pretty much not played in. They bring Okazaki on, they're fighting for the game. We look like we've gone, right, we'll take our best player off at 0-0, and then we're going to bring Danny Ings on because he needs minutes. It felt like that was a pre-planned substitution as well, whereas what we wanted to see was Liverpool go, fucking hell, where's the bench? Why isn't Firmino on the bench? If you really want to get through, why isn't Salah on the bench? Why can't we go and win this game?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the problem. That's a mindset thing that I think Klopp's put into that game.
You're pulling a face, Shai.
Yeah, well, I just think that just reflects what, you know, the priority, really. If he wanted to win that game, Coutinho stays on. I mean, I sometimes, just on a personal level, don't agree with these pre-planned ideas, because games never always pan out the way you want them to. And I just thought maybe you could have left them on a bit longer.
Well, it felt like a pre-season game as a result of it. Not in terms of the important support that we put behind it, because again, I thought the away end was amazing. It's that thing. It's like you're taking a player off for 45 minutes because he's there for fitness. You're putting a player in the game for fitness, not to win a football match. Because as you say, at 0-0, we should be thinking, the mentality, I think, if he's 100% looking to win that game, is I give Phil another 15 and then I make that, and then maybe I reevaluate that decision. I don't know, but it feels, like I say, Ross, it feels very much like that game became very quickly it's just an exercise to get some minutes in the legs of Grujic, of Oxlade-Chamberlain, of Solanke, of Danny Ings, of Ben Woodburn. And again, that might pay dividends in the coming weeks when, or the last, you know, in the last month of the season when we had a mad injury crisis, as we always do, and we have to throw these players in and they've had some footy and the load's better for it instead of being shit like we've had so many years on the road. This might be the game and this might be the one that makes that all reality. But you can't think like that because fucking hell, it's sci-fi, isn't it, you know?
That's what pre-season's for. And like I said, I agree, I don't understand this pre-planned stuff. I mean, Coutinho was a bizarre substitution. Like you said, if you're 1-0 up, 2-0 up, and that's what your plan was, take him off. But when you're in charge of the game and you're running it, don't take one of your best players off. He was creating options and creating space, and you know we were getting at Leicester. And then, like you said, the opposite side was Okazaki grabbed that game by the balls, didn't he? And just ran with it. I mean, we had nothing on the bench to do that.
Yeah.
Then you start looking for answers of, you know, what you do, and then ultimately it's cost us. But then you can't rectify it now because you're out of competition.
It's the second game on the bounce as well that we've ended up with Dom Solanke on the left wing, and I can't see that's a thing that we're going to continue doing this season. You know, and I understand that. I think it was Gini Wijnaldum goes off injured, doesn't he, and stuff. And there is a part to be played, but you know, the one at the weekend where Dom Solanke ended up on the left wing as well, I'm thinking to myself, why? This guy's a forward.
Yeah.
If everything he does, you can tell he's a centre forward. You know, I said it in the build-up show or in the team news show yesterday. I'd rather have seen Ings out there. I know Ings is a centre forward. I know he can do the job there. I want to see his legs. I want to see how he reacts in those situations.
Yeah. I agree with the point that I don't think he has the skill set to be a wide player, but in the World Cup in the under-20s, he played more of a withdrawn role and was like supplying the passes rather than being on the end of them. So I wonder whether he's seen that and thought, well, that could apply,
maybe move him slightly inside, like Coutinho does.
Yeah, it's a different level of football.
It feels again, though, like and I kind of said this at the time, like if the Thomas Lamar move made sense for me because I felt we were going to be another player short in those wide positions, and particularly given we've let Ojo go out on loan, and you know Harry Wilson's been performing for the 23s, which is great, but there doesn't seem to be a great desire to get him into the first team anytime soon, and that's what it felt like, a bit more like I get it. Look, Solanke faded big time in that game, and you know, and to Danny Ings's credit, he looked dangerous-ish. You know what I mean? Like, you know, a little moment when he nipped in and tried to flick a little header, and you know, I get it from that. I get it.
Sorry to interrupt. Markovic being on the bench, couldn't we have had Salah or somebody on in his place? Because we don't want Markovic.
Well, yeah, but
we don't want to get him
to
minutes.
To be fair, Lazar Markovic is the substitution. That why Lazar Markovic doesn't just come on and play. You know what? He's just giving me the people's eyebrow there. But he is a winger. And if he's on the bench, what's the point of him? What's the point of him being on the bench, and then ending up with Dom Solanke playing left wing? And now I get it in regards to, he ends up in the middle of the pitch, on the edge of the 6-yard box at the weekend, and very nearly scores the winner from the left hand side. And I get that because it's meant to be a fluid attack. That guy's meant to be able to come inside and do that. But you're right, it was just a bit. It all just felt very much.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Like, oh, fucking whatever.
Am I right in saying Markovic, he didn't play a single minute of pre-season after the Tranmere friendly? and he hasn't played any under 23 matches at all, and he's on the bench.
Yeah. I thought, just put someone else on there and go for the game.
I genuinely wonder whether he was literally on the bench there, that if we happened to be two or three goals up, we'd throw him on just to remind the world that he was there and the football and available for transfer, because he has got like Leicester written all over him, you know, as a type of sign. And like, mad, just mad. And that's the problem we've got now, is that all this does is put pressure on it, makes you start to question decisions and blah blah blah. This has just been horrendous. Let's talk.
It's been
about
brilliant, hasn't it? So
far. I will feel better after it, though.
I must admit, I do feel a bit better for talking about it. But let's talk about a couple of things that were good, because I think it would be unfair on the players who performed.
Can we do a couple of things that, you know, a couple of really poor performances first, then, just so I feel better?
Okay, well, let's get Oxlade-Chamberlain out the way first.
I was going to say Henderson, but I'm happy to go with Oxlade-Chamberlain. But, you know, we've talked about leadership, we've talked about experienced players, and Jordan Henderson, you know, I'm a fan of Jordan Henderson. I really like him as a footballer, but that performance last night just wasn't good enough.
I thought he was fine, but there was the one moment for me, and I can't remember whether I discussed it on a show, whether we were just chatting about it, but he got played through the midfield, and he's charging forward, and what it needed was him to force the game, was him to just kick the ball forward, and it felt like you watch these moments and you can see the decision cogs turn in his head, and he goes, I'm going to play it back, and he just killed the attack stone dead by playing the sensible pass and playing it back inside, and you're like, mate, you are the captain. I think by this point, this is probably the point where Woodburn's on the pitch, and I think Woodburn might have been moving to midfield by this point. I've lost the timeline in my head on it, if I'm honest. But he needed to be a bit more talismanic. And I understand that, and that's the problem when he's never going to be that for us, Jordan Henderson. I think, and I don't think it's necessarily, it's not like saying he's bad, because I think he's a really good footballer, and I think he's really important to how we play football when he's on his game. But that's always going to be the thing he lacks. And inevitably, yes, what I'm doing there is comparing it to Steven Gerrard, and all I've done is rail against that since he got the captain's armband, because I think that's an unfair comparison. But the point is, in games like that, Steven Gerrard goes and wins your games like that. And again, it's not his fault that he's not Steven Gerrard, but it's not his fault, but it's also part of management fault that the senior players that were left on the pitch were Jordan Henderson and, you know, albeit he's bedding in, but Oxlade-Chamberlain, and they're the guys who were supposed to be able to just go and win you the game by stepping up and going, I'm in the prime of my career, I am an England international, I am better than the players on the pitch that I'm against. I'm just going to go and stick one in the top bin, or I'm going to go and bully my way through and win a free kick on the edge of the box.
You're describing his midfield partner. You're describing Gini Wijnaldum. He's the one who's closer to that. He's the one who picks the ball up, drives the players, gets the crowd into it and stuff like that. That's what I love about Gini Wijnaldum. For me, Jordan Henderson's performance, you know, I get the simple passing. You know, I did a big thing the other day about why I think Liverpool pass it around to see what the other side's going to do, if they're going to come out and, you know, then does it open up a long ball over the top or whatever, like we saw at the weekend with Burnley. So I understand the need for passing the ball sideways at times, you know, especially early on in the game, just as you're feeling out a team. But when you're talking second half and he's running through with the ball and you're chasing the game, you know, you've got to, you know, you can talk all you want about keeping it simple and that. You've got to have something in your head that's going, there's a play clock in your heads and why and what Liverpool need to be doing and how we need to get a goal and what a goal means for you in those situations. It's a risk-reward. And if you get the reward of a goal by being a little bit more direct, the whole team gets a lift and you've got a chance of winning that game. Whereas playing the simple ball in those situations, you can just take the air out of it.
Yeah. I think the expectations on Henderson are enormous, you know, like in terms of, he's succeeding Steven Gerrard, as you said. He's playing in the same position as him. You know, he's playing in an area of the field where you expect some dynamism, you expect some goals. You know, like, obviously, the Chelsea goal last year at Stamford Bridge, that's what we expect more of, you know, from a Liverpool captain. And I think his game has changed quite a lot, like, the last year. I do think the injuries have had an impact on, you know, I think that is reflected by the decision to play him in that role. You know, I think it's not an acceptance, but it's definitely recognition that he probably can't do as much running as he wanted to. Now, whether that's enough for him to be in the Liverpool team, I don't know. I just think he's always going to come under fire.
Yeah.
You know, particularly when there's a period when we're talking about lack of leaders in the team as well. You know, because like, he's expected to show that. I think he does lead the team quite well, to be honest. He does try and take responsibility, but
I think he's a good captain, and I think he's
if he was a centre half, it's a slightly easier job, because the centre midfield role at Liverpool at any major club is, and if you're the captain, the focus is on you all the time. Every single touch of the ball that you have. Particularly when you succeed in Steven Gerrard, I think. But I think it's fair to expect a bit more from him as well. I do, because there's been so many occasions, you know, and you know, it always seems to fall to him on the edge of the box, and it's either a pass rather than have a go, you know, that speculate a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
But then equally flip side of that, was it Sevilla where he passes it to the left and we score off the back of it?
Yeah, that's true, yeah. It's about making the right decision ultimately, isn't it? But whether he makes enough of those right decisions.
It's not necessarily about him having pot shots from all over the place, because
we've seen it with Stevie in the past. You know, like in the past, he overdid it sometimes. Yeah. But
it is more for me about just, I don't know. You just want to get it. You want to get a sense of like, rah, you know, like from your midfield. And I mean, this is the problem. Is he's probably fallen foul a little bit of what we talk about. What I feel was the mentality of. Worried about the Klopp selection or how seriously we took that game, whatever, because he ends up in a midfield with Marko Grujic, who's his first start of the season, who's still, 20 years old or whatever, still finding his way, and Ben Woodburn, who's 17 years old.
It sets a mentality, doesn't it, that substitution?
And he's then, you know, he's being given less good players around him, and given that he's not Steven Gerrard and he doesn't have that top quality in his locker, it's unfair of us to ask of him to be able to deliver on this. I don't know, but I think Oxlade-Chamberlain though, moving on to him, Ross, I mean again similarly, by the end of the game I think he's knackered, plus you could see that whatever we were doing well in the first half was completely gone by 70 minutes of that football match, or you know, definitely the last 10 or so. There's no one there to link up. We don't look fluid anymore. He looks like he's playing a winger. How many times we just pass the ball to him, expecting him to go and do something? And I sound like I'm making a defence of him. I am to some extent. But even taking into account certain circumstances, there's nothing in that performance really that makes you go, wow, what an incredible signing. Wasn't it a good decision to spend £40 million on him instead of, let's say, a centre-half or whatever instead?
I've seen that tweet so many times, by the way.
I think he was caught in two minds of trying too hard and being dog shit. he was like, particularly in the second half, he was just running into avenues and going nowhere, not looking up at who was available, and then inevitably just losing the ball, or some of his passing was just terrible. I mean, he might have been knackered by then, but then, do you know what I mean? We can see that. It goes back to the Klopp thing of, you know, you don't have a backup on the bench, so he has to carry on.
Yeah.
And he hasn't played that amount of games, or he hasn't played in that team for a huge amount of time. So, do you know what I mean? He's in a difficult position of...
It's just that thing, though, isn't it? Is that Paul Tompkins always goes on about this, about the success rate of signings, and there's every chance that he will. He'll just continue to be the player he was at Arsenal and just be really inconsistent and not be able to get to the top level or whatever. But it is just nice. I think it's made all the harder by the fact that Mo Salah's just come in and just been amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes players do have to come in and bed in the fact that he's not had that pre-season with us. He's having to learn on the job a little bit to some extent. And he's come off the bench and he's played in a couple of different positions and he's played in difficult circumstances. He's not played in a full-strength, flying Liverpool team.
Hmm.
He looks lacking a confidence, Paul. And he's coming from a system that's completely different to ours. You know, he's been ingrained in that Arsenal way for a long time now. And he's coming in and he's being asked to do something slightly different. He's playing back out on the wing for a start. I said to you last night, I can understand why we were interested in Ben Chilwell. I thought he dealt with Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain brilliantly. I thought first half, maybe first 25 minutes, when he was popping short passes off, his touch was good, and he looked into the game.
He kept width, and the amount of times we got him behind a lot with him.
Yeah.
And that's where I thought, that's where I was impressed. It was harder because, of course, we were the opposite end of the ground, so that's and it's the first half, so inevitably the recency bias of it, you forget a lot about that stuff. But yeah, you know, I don't think he had an absolute stinker from start to finish, but he did look like by the end of that game, he completely ran out of ideas. He ran out of legs, and I think his confidence was completely shot. And it was typified by the fact that he just played just a crap ball. I think he just went to knock one. And there was one where he just had to pass it 5 yards inside.
Oh yeah,
and he just like weakly towed it slightly behind somebody, give it away, and that's the point where I think everyone who was left who was gonna get off from the game wasn't determined to stay till full time whistle just went, yeah, fine, fucking hell, I'm getting in the club.
Listen, he's had a bad game. That's his first start for Liverpool Football Club. I watched him for best part of 6 years at Arsenal. I really liked it. I understand that he can be a little bit inconsistent and stuff, but his good parts for me were still worth signing. You know, he has the ability, and I think actually he maybe is more suited to playing centrally now, just from that first 25 minutes where he's in that little bit of space. He can play a pass.
You look at him physically, you know, he's so powerful looking. He almost looks too big to play like on the wing. I think, you know, his best games that when I've seen him play for Arsenal have always been in the middle, and it's always surprised me that Wenger's never really trusted him to go in there. So it'll be interesting with the club.
He made sense as a backup wing option, I thought, last night, just because of his pace, because he is so fast. But the problem is, like everything we did last night, is that if you get a win by any means necessary in that game, you win that 1-0 or 2-1 or whatever, like a deflected goal or whatever, all of these like squad options, all of a sudden, we're just looking at them in a really positive sense. And we get to look at all those little moments and stuff and go, yeah, now it means that we can drop him in and give Salah a rest in some of the less competitive games, and that'll be absolutely fine. Whereas inevitably, you look around all that, and we're going to come on to the build-up show, and I think it's a fair case to say all the lads who perform well, it kind of doesn't matter.
They're not starting.
Because none of them are going to start at the weekend. None of them are going to make a push to be in our first team, because again, whether it's kind of irrelevant, the good stuff they put in, because we feel really down about it, because life is fucking shit.
Finally,
Liverpool can't win football matches.
Finally on Chamberlain, then. He's not a corner taker either. He's the first man up. He's got it. He did one, didn't he? And then it went out for another, and then he did another and it hit the first man, and then he spoke to Marco Grujic.
He went, mate, help me out, make a run. And then he made the run, and we played it short the fucking end of shit. And then he fucking whipped it in, and everyone had made the run. Oh my God.
So what we were saying is basically they were talking. I think it was the Wijnaldum injury break. I mean, Paul, like, yeah, he's definitely gone to Grujic and said, just stand on that near post for me, mate, will you? And try and get a flick on or something.
Maybe
like,
look good.
It was a good short corner, actually, apart from the fact that, you know, everyone ran.
And Henderson played a terrible
He
ball.
Also injured Ulloa, which brought Okazaki on, so I'm going to blame him for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
He'll never play for the club again, should he?
Nah, shite, mate. okay, I think that's the clear pause to out the way. Andy Robertson, my word. That boy knows how to cross a football, doesn't he, Ross?
Robertson Carlos, yeah. Yeah, it was like a breath of fresh air the first half, I thought. And the fact that he consistently kept doing it and consistently kept putting decent balls in the box, whereas you think it was going to pay off, and at one point, obviously, just died. But, you know, if he carries on doing that, people aren't used to the way that he plays, the way he plays the balls and where the areas that he puts them in. Do you know what I mean? I'm sure they practice it in training, but that's what we need to get used to. I think it's different.
Benteke,
yeah.
Want to get him back?
It's true. That'll be all over it.
I think that's the first time he's played with Solanke as well. So
and Solanke, that one where the back post is like full stretch.
Yeah,
that's
another time that goes in. Yeah. Same with if you've got Sturridge or someone else who's played with him before, knows where the ball's going to go. It's just practice, I think.
And Phil found him as well a few times, which didn't happen.
In the first half, yeah.
Phil actually passed to him, it was great. Real encouragement from Andy Robertson. We mentioned Dom Solanke. I thought he handled himself really well. There was I think he's just got the potential to have such a good all-round game, because again he was getting in behind when he had to be. Like I said, he's got that little bit of a striker's instinct as well, but there's a couple like back heels he's playing, and he's dropping off the front, and he's knocking it, but when he knocks it off, he's then sprinting to get back into position as well. Again, a goal makes a massive difference to our thinking on his performance there, but yeah, it was fine, wasn't it?
Yeah, of course it was, and I think it will continue to be so with Solanke. You know, he seems to be one of those players that you get them for some reason, players take to straight away, and whether that's his performances in pre-season, fans take to straight away, and maybe that's down to his performances in pre-season, but I said a couple of weeks ago, every time I've seen him play, I see just a little bit more of his game, and you know, he surprises me. We can do that as well. You know, his first touch again was really good, and he's looking to bring players in, and yeah, he's really pacey. He's got that fire in his belly. I think he wants to score goals. And, you know, going back to something I said a few weeks ago again, he's the first striker that Jürgen Klopp's brought in. And I think he's the mould for what we're going to see from Jürgen Klopp if he's given 5, 6, 7 years for what type of a striker we might see. It's a guy that not only can do everything that Firmino's done, although he's not playing anywhere near that level yet, but a guy who also wants to spin round the back, like you say, and get those goals on the other side. And I just wonder whether right now we are making a little bit of a trade-off with Firmino, and long term we will see someone come in who can maybe do it all.
Like. Yeah, it's like a fit storage, isn't he?
Slanky.
For some reason, natural goal scorer. Yeah.
Storage
of five, 6 years ago.
How many games do you reckon he'll play this season, Solanke? Well, because he is going to need games, isn't he? Yeah. He's going to need to play in
all of Origi's.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what? Origi got 15,
who scored last
maybe.
Night as well.
Yeah.
Did he?
They've sacked the manager as well, haven't they, Wolfsburg?
Amazing. Fucking hell, amazing.
At least we've got the money for him as well.
Yeah. Grujic, I thought he was fine. I think he's probably one of the ones who takes blame for their second goal. I think the problem with our midfield is that I still don't know what position Marco Grujic plays. He's not a DM. He doesn't necessarily look box to box, and I'm not sure he's quick enough or cultured enough yet to be the Lallana of the attacking midfield slot. And it's one of them where Henderson, for some reason, is playing one of the more advanced roles. He's pushed on for the throw, and the ball goes over his head. Grujic is therefore the guy charged with being the DM, and he does this when the guy goes past him. When it's not this, mate, it's this. Pull the shirt off his back.
Daddy yellow.
Exactly. Take him out the game. Do whatever. It's a shame because again, I think we probably judge him as a young player and say, again, good, probably one of his better performances in a senior game for Liverpool. Let's maybe disregard the poor.
I thought he looked, you know, in pre-season, you know, again, there's some promising signs. I mean, you can't judge anything by pre-season, I suppose, but he has got a certain presence about him, hasn't he? Just because of his size, you know, he's got a bit of nasty about him as well, yeah. Which I quite like. But I know, I agree with what you're saying there, Paul. I can't quite, just because he hasn't played enough,
yeah.
You know, where he quite fits in. But sometimes I watch Liverpool and, like, you know, with the three midfields, they kind of do all sometimes blend into the same type of player, don't they? So it's difficult. I mean, I know they kind of want Wijnaldum getting into the more like the attacking areas, and that means that whoever is the other one that isn't sitting has to stay. But they're all a bit like that, aren't they? Yeah. You know, you wouldn't say there's like kind of one outstanding quality about any of those midfielders, but they should, you know, together if it works as a unit, if you like. In football management speak, you know, it can be effective.
Yeah.
But it'll be, you know, when Lallana's got to come back as well, hasn't he? Sorry to drift off about but he has got to come back. He's become the most important midfield.
I worry a little bit with Grujic, Chris, and for the Solanke as well, is that they're both at the minute looking like lads who are going to be last 15 minutes when you need a specific thing doing, which is having a big lad on the pitch to kick the ball up to or whatever and be physical or whatever. The problem is that, at 19, 20, or whatever they both are, if they were... Look at Man United's equivalent this season is Fellaini, and it's going to be Ibrahimovic when he comes back. And these are guys who've been there and done it and done whatever. And it's the problem is these guys need game time to develop their own natural games. At the minute, I don't see that either of them are good enough to get in the first team. But I don't know where
that depends on what type of form you're in, to be honest. I think, you know, we saw at the end of Kenny Dalglish's reign where he started to trust into the senior pros a little bit more and was afraid of using the youth that really got him the League Cup for us. You know, but I think, you know, having a good run of games, maybe 4 wins on the bounce, those substitutions all flow a little bit easier. Think of it in footy manager terms. You know, you go through a bad patch and you try everything and nothing works and you end up with your starting 11 that you thought about at the beginning of the season. You're in a good patch in footy manager. Every fucking substitution works, do you know what I mean? And I wonder if it's the same in Jürgen Klopp's case. You know, he makes a change, maybe he makes one change for a league game and puts Solanke up front. No one's judging him after 4 wins about changing the striker.
Yeah.
But after two draws and 2 losses, you change the striker in. It's like, what the fuck's he doing here? We can't score with our fucking first team and all this type of stuff. So I do think the one thing that Klopp's got is he is committed to developing young players. That's one thing that he's done throughout his entire career. So whereas we might take it a game by game, he is looking further down the line and going,
I'm earmarking him for maybe a game here. I'm earmarking him for maybe a game here or a few minutes here, regardless of the result. And, you know, maybe that's what we fell foul of last night. That's why we saw Ben Woodburn come in last night, regardless of the result, because he's committed to developing these young players. Yeah. And maybe that's why young players want to come and play for him.
He's got to give Woodburn game time. I mean, he scored on his debut for Liverpool. He scored for Wales on his debut. He's influenced the next game along. You know, if he doesn't get games, when is he going to get games? You know, he clearly has something about him to be able to come on and react to that kind of pressure situation. I mean, the Liverpool manager's job is one of the most difficult in the world. I think it's actually probably the most difficult senior manager's job in terms of the history and the expectation not really meeting the reality of the situation. And he does have to find a way to get some of these academy players into the team. Because I think in the long term, if you want to have long-term success, you do have to have some players that are associated with the club because they won't leave then.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen the situation this summer again, haven't we, with Coutinho wanting to leave. Like, if, you know, in 5 years' time, would Ben Woodburn want to go to Barcelona? Maybe not, because he's wedded to the club. So he's going to have to find a way of balancing that. And it's a tough one, I think. It is a tough task, the manager's job. And I think at this time, it's obviously manifesting in the way people are looking.
Yeah. Just the last couple, right, again, Ben Woodburn, we mentioned there. I thought he just looks an absolute star. He just looks like he's going to be so good at football. He comes on and he we talk about taking the game by the scruff of the neck. And like Ross, he wanted the football. He was not afraid of having the ball at his feet. He was not afraid of being surrounded by men. He's not afraid to pass it. He wasn't afraid to try and get a shot off when he thought the situation was right. He played left wing. He played left of the attacking mid. He played right of the attacking mid. He drifted over to the right to make stuff happen. He, again, 17 years old. And if there's one thing that this comes back to, I hope that we're looking back on this performance from him in a year or 5 years' time and going, God, we knew it then, and what a player he's going to go on become.
Yeah, trying to look at it positively, I think even though we lost, the experience of him playing in that cup and amongst that team will only benefit him. Like you said, though, he struggled to see where he'd play unless his major injuries would he get game time. But it's nice to have someone who's got no fear. He hasn't really got anything to lose, I suppose, has he, in that sense? He's just a nice outlet to have, particularly when even in Premier League games, you think he's not arsed, he can play Premier League games and he can make a difference.
Yeah, I agree. Just one more player to mention then. So, Danny Ward, he literally got his name sung after 5 minutes of this game, which is more than Simon Mignolet's ever had. It's more than Loris Karius ever had. I'd said to Chris, there's a real sense from Liverpool fans, I think, that we really want him to be a success. And he just looked, and it's very hard. It's a very hard thing to do because you have to go with instinct, I think, in a lot in these games, because you can't take any blame for either of the goals conceded. I don't think you can do anything about either of them. My overriding sense of him, I just get a real sense of calm watching him in goal for Liverpool. It's weird. He looks the right fit. He seems to understand the way that we want to play football. His game, with the way he plays the ball out from the back, seems set up to play it the way that it's meant to be played. He's not asked about passing it to a man who's in trouble. He's not asked about moving the ball quickly. He can dominate his area. I really want to see him get more games for Liverpool. It's just unfortunate that I have no idea how and when that's gonna happen.
Yeah, you do feel that at the moment, don't you? I mean, I think Jürgen is obviously, he's wanted to give Karius game time, and Mignolet had an iffy game against Watford, but didn't come under the microscope quite so much. But because of the will, his determination to give Karius game time, it's kind of brought more questions back to Mignolet again, hasn't it? Suddenly, you know, inadvertently, I don't think that was the plan, obviously, but it has. And gets the conversation starting again about Liverpool goalkeepers, oh, they're not good enough. So I don't think that's where... It goes back to what I was trying to say before about the way, you know, like, kind of fans will react to it. So you've obviously got to make the decision, but you've got to be clear with your reason why you're doing it. And I think the reason wasn't quite clear, really. But with Ward, I think he's... I've been around him over the years, you know, interviewing him a few times, and he's very smart lad, you know what I mean? He's got that a bit of edge to him as well. He is very intelligent, but he's, you can just tell he's got that little bit of, you know, again, a little bit of nasty about him. You can see that, you know, if you got into the team, he'd be difficult to displace, I think. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are some question marks, I still think. I mean, he had a great season last year, didn't he, for Huddersfield? I mean, I remember seeing him in the Euros for playing when he got brought on for Wales, and he seemed a bit daunted by the occasion on that one particular match, and it made me think, well, he's got some way to go there. But at the end of the day, you've got to give him a chance if you think that if he's a long-term goalkeeper, and allow him to make mistakes. Again, with goalkeepers and with young players, you're going to have to accept the mistakes, and yeah. Are the fans going to accept that when it happens? I don't know. Even like we've seen it with Trent, haven't we, the last couple of weeks?
Yes.
Like, one, he's gone from being the next great hope to being, well, actually.
Yeah.
The reality is he probably could be if he's given that time. But do we have that patience?
The good thing about that, the one thing I say on that though, and you know, you're right, that good favour doesn't last long in football, does it? That they just, like I say, the general sense I got from it, Chris, is that thing of, it feels like he would be, I mean, it would be like the fans' choice to have him as our goalkeeper at this point. But the thing about it doesn't feel like delusion. Like, if we, Ben had a great performance, but I'm not thinking, get him in the team, he's going to solve all our problems. And I'm not saying Wood would solve our problems, but I do feel as though we would be a better, I feel from just what I've seen that we would just be better in the goalkeeping department.
I agree. I was a little bit concerned about what type of a goalkeeper he was, because, you know, I've watched games here and there, but I wasn't really sure whether he was going to come out from his area, be that sweeper keep that I think this Liverpool defence and this Liverpool side needs. There was stuff there last night where he's coming out and, was it Clavin? No, it was Joe Gomez, had a bit of a mix-up, and Danny Ward screaming at him as soon as there's a break in play about that, because he wanted that and he was calling for that ball. The way he caught the ball was fantastic, not just in the six-yard box, the one on the 17-yard line, that made-up yard line that I've just said. The one 17 yards out from his goal, right on the edge of his area.
The 1 yard behind the 18-yard box.
The 17-yard line. So he picks the ball up there, and not many goalkeepers are coming out there and grabbing the ball in traffic, and he does that brilliantly. His distribution, he's throwing the ball at mad angles because he knows it's the right throw. He's like when he's just skim rocks on a river, he's throwing the ball out like that because it's the right angle to do it.
David James, like,
full on spin. He did three different types, you know, the one over the shoulder and all that. And I'm like, this guy's showing off here. He's showing he understands, you know, a nice pass into Jordan Henderson. Everyone goes a bit nuts because there's a little bit of traffic on him. Pass the ball back out to Clavin.
He's not asked about doing that. He's not, and that's the thing about me. For me, it was so mechanical in how he took his goal kicks. That it's like, no, this is how goal kicks are taken. It always feels with Mignolet like, well, okay, I'll pass
sure?
it on.
You want me to pass it on about this?
To him, I'll pass it out to him.
Waving a white flag as he's taking a goal kick.
But it's like Ward goes, I know there's two men on Jordan Henderson there, but I know that Jordan Henderson's not the man who's going to be kicking the ball down the pitch. I know it's Ragnar Klavan. So he understands the process. So again, he puts the ball central for the goal kick. He kicks to Henderson. He gets the pass straight back, and it goes to Klavan, as you mentioned there, and we're away. And it never felt like he was making it up. It felt like it was meant. That was how it was meant to be, and he always knew that was how it meant to be. Very interesting, anyway. And that's one of the big positives, and unfortunately, one of the potential disappointments there, because I don't want to have to wait till January to see another Danny Ward game, and you know, I can't wait till the third round of the FA Cup to see it. And I don't want to wish injuries on people, but you know, but this is how careers are made sometimes. I think I think, you know, it might take an opportunity being dropped in his lap, and him taking that. You know, sometimes that's how careers are forged, on moments of just pure luck or chance of being the right guy in the right place at the right time. And you know, I genuinely wish no ill upon do the goalkeepers of the club in any way, shape or form, but no genuinely, like, because you know, equally either of them could take the opportunity. It's the same thing.
Just a couple of small finger injuries,
but no, can... just but yeah what but you know, so this is to try to disassociate yourself, you know, just take off the humanity out of the Karius Mignolet side of things and just think from a Danny Ward perspective. I hope he gets an opportunity, whatever that opportunity is, to really try and win that first team place. The one last thing I want to mention before we go was something right at the end of the game. You know, most of the Liverpool fans, you know, got off in the last few minutes of the match. The game was dead and buried, and I think it's forgivable to some extent. Like, but the there was a group of lads, and I think it's kind of irrelevant, but I think they might have had Brummie accents from what I could work out. And there's just, and they're probably in their, maybe in the 30s or whatever.
Maybe a bit older.
Maybe a bit older. And there was but there was this old Scouse fellow, I think was in his 60s, and at the end of the game, he was kicking off at this lad, and he was going, all you've done all game long is moan and complain about the team. You're a supporter, you're meant to support the team. And the fella's argument back was, I'm not supporting them when they play shit. And it's your face says it all there, mate. And it was a fascinating thing. And this guy was on his own, was taking on, there was like four fellas who were all foot and a half bigger than him as well. And it was good. It was a great comment we had on, I don't know if it was in a video I did or it was on Twitter or whatever. And he was saying how he was at Anfield years ago as a kid, and he started kicking off about a player and shouting. And he said, this old Scouse fella tapped him on the shoulder and went, we don't do that in here, son. We support the players on the pitch. And he said it totally changed his outlook on how to be a fan and how to support things. And it was one of them. I'm glad that someone stepped up in some regard, because I do get the lad who's kicking off, because you're right, it is very difficult to find the motivation to fucking go, come on, boys, when you're watching us getting fucking beat. I don't want civil war amongst the fans, but I did think it was nice to see like an old school
seasoned vet
Red turning around, taking people to task over it, because I've said it before, I think people know my stance on this, I agree. I don't think it's fair to criticise, but your only job in the football match, in the ground, in the stadium, is to sing songs and make noise and support the team. And so, yeah, I don't know. But that was one weird thing that I kind of enjoyed. I'm glad that there are people standing up for it inside the ground, and hopefully...
It's an increasing theme, though, isn't it? Like, more and more fans, whatever club, you know, feel a sense of entitlement, because the amount of money that they're paying to actually go, and the time and investments. And, you know, I do think it's up to kind of, you know, for football supporters, particularly older, more experienced ones, to self-govern, you know, what's going on, because otherwise, you know, it's not going to do anything for the team, is it really? I can understand why people are frustrated and, you know, in the heat of the moment, they get wound up. But
you can't help going, when something goes over the bar. That's a natural reaction, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't that part and parcel of football, though, is to have the highs and the lows together, isn't it? You don't support Liverpool because they win every fucking game, or I mean, you don't support Liverpool because of the amount of money they spend, or the amount of money that the players get. Yeah. So if you want instant success, go and support fucking City.
I think everyone wants Liverpool to be a success, don't they? Everyone wants Liverpool to win every game. Like I say, this is not a criticism in a wider sense, but it is. I think it got lost a little bit when I mentioned this the other week, but I think the stuff in the ground, I say, you can't. There's no effect in human nature. We've all done it. We've all fucking lost our heads when things have just broken down. Like, fucking come on, pass the ball, do this and this. But it's always meant to be followed by, you know, like, right, come on, fuck, there we go, I've lucky little fucking this. Love. Come on, get your heads down, let's fucking go. And I think what typified that, as a very last point, Chris, was at 1-0 down, the Liverpool fans were almost the best I've heard them. The Leicester fans started singing, "You're not singing anymore," which typifies everything you've said about them just being shit England fans. And the absolute roar that was generated from the away end.
That was as loud as I've been in a long time. Like, you know, you can feel it, and it's raucous, and it's loud, and it's raw, and it's angry, and it's everything. It's garar. Exactly. That's what it is. That was a bit of an in-joke, sorry, Si. And you know, it's like, yous haven't sang all game. We've been here screaming and singing and supporting this shite on the pitch, and yous are having a fucking go at us here. You having a laugh, like, and everyone, the difference between loads of noise and that is the arms come out.
Yeah.
And everyone's fucking arms come out. Doesn't make a difference to the noise, but it makes a difference to the spectacle. Yeah. And they realise that we're fucking here.
Yeah.
And we're still proud of our team, and we'll still support our fucking team. And we'll be here when you go back down next fucking season. And we'll fucking continue to be here. And we'll be trying to win fucking stuff after yous are fucking fucked up as a club.
Yeah, it was that one last thing for me is that I really wish we could have just captured that and show that, because I'm feel absolutely certain that the response to people who are watching at home or watching on laptops and sat on their own and various people, not in the pubs and stuff like that, but people just watching, consuming this game and interacting on social media, I bet all the heads fell off at 1-0. And I'm just, what's worth pointing out is that the fans who were there in the ground, quite the opposite. And that's the point about what I've been making about all this, is that that's what you've got to be. When you're in the ground, that's your role as inside the stadium, is to be, nah, fuck you, because it's meant to be us and the players versus their players and their and their fans. And, you know, we, as fans, I thought, you know, we dominated for large periods of that game, and that was, you know,
we just didn't finish
but ultimately
them off.
We couldn't finish them off. Yeah, I know. Sad, yeah,
but I had an experience this other week, because I didn't go to the Man City game and I wasn't working that weekend, and I watched it at home. I watched it at home and I found myself getting more wound up at home than I ever would actually. Well, working, it's a different situation, but in terms of if you're there as a fan, because you straight away like kind of get an opinion thrown at you that this is what it is, and then you're checking your phone. You wouldn't do that at the match, would you? Yeah. And so more and more people now, I think, as people are more used to watching at home, they kind of probably expect it to be like that kind of negative cycle in the match as well. And jumping to quick conclusion, you kind of lose sight of, there's actually a match going on in front of you. You know, it can change. But
yeah, absolutely. Right. But yeah, interesting stuff. And like I say, I think that's the good thing about it. It's one of them. I think if you ever feel like you're losing your head with Liverpool, it's worth trying to do everything in your power to just get yourself in the ground and just get a real sense of the feeling of stuff, like, because that gave me a real sense of hope. And ultimately, it doesn't go away, but that's the point. We did, we played our part there as fans to do everything to get behind the team, and that doesn't then mean you turn around and go, you useless shower of bastards. I mean, you do that when you get outside, do that in the pub, get wound up, get annoyed. We've sat here for an hour now and picking apart all the bad parts of it, but that's the point. You do that, you get out, you analyse, you get stuff off your chest, you try your best to cleanse yourself, and then you try again, you pick yourself up and you support the team in the next game and so on and so forth. And then eventually when it's all fucked, you rally against the manager and the owners and you start again after that. But anyway, thanks very much for watching the show. I hope everyone's enjoyed it this time around. Obviously, the final word is, sometimes it's loads of fun when you smash teams. Sometimes it's actually quite enjoyable when you even in the face of adversity, even in the face of defeat, because it is good to talk through these things. If you've enjoyed the show, let us know in the comments below. And of course, thank you very much for being a subscriber to RedmenTV.com. You make all of this possible. We'll see you back here soon. There's going to be a Red News Roundup show going out. I'm going to be sitting down and talking with Si Hughes about his new book as well. That'll be there. And of course, the build-up show coming for yet another encounter with Leicester at the King Power.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Oh, amazing. Look forward to that one. Ta-da.